This is an Enterprise Times podcast. I'm here with Himanshu Palsule, CTO of Epicor. Hi, Himanshu.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
We're here at Epicor Insights. We've mainly been hearing on stage around the decision and the strategic decision for Epicor to go with Azure. Obviously, your retail product is still sitting on AWS. And I wonder why you made that decision and what's the future hold for that kind of relationship? Because we also heard Microsoft talk about how they're hybrid as well.
Our decision to move our manufacturing and distribution products to the Azure Public Platform really came down to three things. The first one was around fit. So fit in technology, fit into an environment, and fit into the customer environment. Both the manufacturing and distribution products from their genesis has been in the Microsoft stack. So from a fit perspective, while the other platforms, I think, do a great job at extending themselves into verticals, Microsoft became the obvious choice. The second was future-proofing. These are decisions that obviously you don't want to repeat on a frequent basis. So we had to understand roadmap and long-term direction. All the major cloud providers today have exciting roadmaps. And in their own way, they are going to be probably very successful in what they do. And the third really came down to partnership. Are we going to work with a company that understands our business, that we have a relationship with, that understands commercially what it means winning? In the ecosystem that we work in and the customers we work across, I think Microsoft won hands down. So for our manufacturing and distribution products, moving from combination of single tenancy customers that are hosted in our own colo, we have several customers already on Azure, centralizing that to Azure as a public cloud platform made a lot of sense. In this hybrid world, we are not going to be able to dictate the exact environment that customers are going to be in. So the other thing we liked about Microsoft was their ability to interoperate across clouds. Let's take our own example. We have a great payment exchange solution that has been built in AWS. It was built into the AWS stack. It works well in AWS. And we shouldn't have religion around cloud direction. If a payment system works well for AWS, we are going to absolutely continue to innovate in AWS and ensure that it integrates well into the ERP that's in Azure. There are several other products that we have that have been built in AWS. We ensure that these products are loosely coupled into the platform. So when it is the right time, and as long as the market and customers enable it, allow it, we see ourselves moving more and more towards Azure Public Cloud. The reason to move to Microsoft, again, wasn't just about data centers. That's obviously a big part. Having the security, having the scalability, having the connectedness, having the disaster recovery. It then starts getting into the platform elements of Azure, things like IoT, things like artificial intelligence, things like machine learning. These kinds of services start becoming more interesting to us as we look at our future roadmap.
You mentioned AI there, and AI means lots of different things, and it's kind of an umbrella term. Where do you think your focus is going to be on AI? Because we hear from other ERP companies who are probably slightly further down the road than you on AI. And I'm just wondering what direction you're going to go in, because some companies are going in different directions.
In my 30 years in this industry, 28 of which have been spent building ERP products, the one thing you quickly learn is technology trends come and go, customer needs remain constant. When we started looking at artificial intelligence, the question we asked ourselves is, what does this mean to a customer? I'll give you an example. We launched something called telemetry. So telemetry today is a dashboard that allows us to aggregate customer usage information, and we've built alerts when we start feeling that customer usage is going outside of the tolerance limits. We had a particular customer in Australia, and we noticed that two of their reports are running incredibly slow. We had someone from customer support call the customer, understand what was happening even before the customer had seen the problem, and then the customer realized the situation and we were able to remedy it. You can imagine how delighted that customer was that we were proactively able to reach out and solve a problem. Now, we could put the moniker around, was that analytics, was that artificial intelligence, was that telemetry? Well, my point is, when technology gets adapted to solve a customer problem, I think the magic starts to happen. There are several initiatives around predictability and system intelligence is where we are focusing our AI efforts. ERP traditionally has been the system of record. We have looked at it in the past more as an application. You start looking at it from a data-centric view, and all of a sudden, opportunities start to open up. CFOs would love to have the application start giving them guidance. It would love to tell them, are they procuring inventory from a vendor at the right price point? When are they projected to start running out of stock? So the work going on in AI is intrinsically, and that's why having a platform is important, building that in business processes that are aware of the context, that are aware of data, and then start advising the customer on these actions. To me, that, from an artificial intelligence perspective, is significantly more important to a customer than buying an AI module that is supposed to solve or a dashboard that is supposed to drive alerts or decisions. So that's kind of our philosophy around AI, and you'll see a lot more in the coming months and years.
You talk about the evolution of ERP there, but where do you see ERP going? Because there is discussion about the monolithic ERP days are over, and yet some people almost seem to be going back down that direction to a certain extent.
Having been as long as I have working on ERP, I think it's probably been one of the most resilient sectors in our industry. When Y2K happened, when DOS to Windows happened, when Sarbanes-Oxley happened, there was a lot of conversation around, is this the last ERP? And from here on out, it's basically going to be a standardization. ERP has continued to reinvent itself. We believe the industries that we are in are going through a sort of a renaissance with manufacturing, distribution, analysts call it Industry 4.0. The postmodern ERP, in my mind, is going to be an end-to-end suite of business applications that are loosely coupled, that is data and context aware, and then based on RESTful APIs. And here's why it's important. Especially when you move in the cloud, it's going to be more and more difficult to predict the exact cloud environment and the exact solutions that run within a customer's office. We believe we have all the necessary ingredients within our ERP. But as I always tell our teams that we believe we have a great CRM product. We just launched mobile CRM. It's of course going to happen where a customer has Salesforce or some other version, Microsoft CRM or Sugar CRM, and we need to be able to fit into that environment. So that fit becomes very important. We have a great HCM product. A customer might be using ADP for payroll. We need to be able to fit into that environment. So I think a postmodern ERP is not going to be monolithic. It's going to be an end-to-end solution. But again, the design principle we are going after is this whole idea of loosely coupled services, some people call them microservices, that can adapt and fit into the environment to be successful.
Can you define loosely coupled? Because that's an odd term and some people may misinterpret it.
Loosely coupled to me means services that integrate and work seamlessly with one another, but have minimum dependency on one another. Technically, some of these are also called serverless or headless processes. For example, let's take a simple example like login. Login is a process. You don't want the login process so tightly connected to a single product. We want all our products in our portfolio to use the same login process, to have significant reusability. So we worry about identity and security once, and then it applies across. In the business context, there are so many different processes you can look at, and it could be parts of MRP, it could be portions of code to cash, that if they are loosely coupled, they can be easily extended and adapted in a customer environment. And the opposite of loosely coupled, obviously, is monolithic. We don't want something so monolithic that it's not flexible enough to adapt to a customer environment.
One of the other announcements this week was around the strategic partnership with Jitterbit, which was almost pushed in gently, I thought. But it seems to me that that's actually very important strategically when you're talking about these loosely coupled modules and loosely coupled services, because actually that is the vehicle by which you're going to be integrating into places like Salesforce, SAP in a two-tier ERP situation. Is that a fair view?
That's exactly correct. Today we have functionality, we call it Service Connect, that allows us to connect and integrate products well together. And it works wonderfully. Many of our customers use Service Connect. When you go into the cloud and you go back to that loose coupling, we can't always dictate what the customer has. Going back to maybe it's Tableau, maybe it's Salesforce.com, maybe it's any of these popular tools. We don't want to get into the game of creating those integrations bespoke one at a time. It's not scalable, and then it's, of course, very difficult to maintain. Not only does someone like Jitterbit give us that opportunity to drive these integrations, But they come with dozens and dozens of integrations that are already built in. I think it's hundreds of integrations that are already built in. They already have a Salesforce integration. They already have an ADP integration. So the whole idea for us and for our partners is being able to leverage something like an integration as a service partner like Jitterbit will allow us to, I don't want to say automatically, but with relative ease, reach out into those applications that would have been harder in the past. We've announced this relationship, and you'll see us moving forward, coming up with more and more innovation, working together with Jitterbit on a common roadmap of integration.
If I go on the exhibition hall this week, there aren't a huge number of stands that are non-Epicor. Going forward 12 months, do you expect to have more partnerships with more non-Epicor cloud vendors? So you might see a Salesforce stand next year because actually they are becoming a partner, because actually Epicor is a manufacturing product that could sit very easily alongside a CRM like Salesforce.
We absolutely need to broaden our ecosystem, but philosophically for us, it's always going to be quality over quantity. What we don't envision is having a marketplace where we invite all vendors to participate and then allow a customer to choose between the best. We believe the onus is on us to have certified partners, again, because we look at this from a global scale perspective, who fit into our design philosophy. They have the same customer obsession that we do and provide that integration metaphor. You will see more partners next year at Insights than we have today for sure. But what we are not going to do, and I know there are other companies who do this, is sort of have an open marketplace where anyone can come and build an app, integrate with Epicor, and then have either our consultants or customers make that choice.
One of the products that Azure has got, and hasn't really been mentioned this week, is blockchain. Is that relevant to the manufacturing sector or the distribution sector? And if so, are you looking at it?
Let's talk about blockchain. In Epicor Labs, we've now spent about 6 months looking at blockchain. What product management is working on is understanding use cases that make blockchain important. What impresses me the most about blockchain is not the financial payment section as much as the ability to have a distributed general ledger spread across dozens, sometimes hundreds of servers. So the technology we are trying to understand is what benefit are we going to have as an ERP company with a distributed GL? Is that going to give us greater extensibility? Is that going to allow us to process faster? I don't think we have a definitive plan yet. We are looking at it very carefully. We are understanding where the evolution is happening. We are frankly less interested in the financial aspect of blockchain. We have a payments engine. We have multiple methods of payment. And maybe in a drop-down box somewhere in the future, a blockchain kind of method of payment might show up. To me, that's very tactical. What fascinates me on the blockchain technology is this whole distributed general ledger, which is a sea change from the way general ledgers were done before. You had general ledgers with segments and dimensions, but they all existed together. They were never broken up and spread across hundreds of computers around. We'll have a point of view in the next, I would say, probably 6 to 9 months on what that means. It's actively being processed in our labs. We just haven't found a use for it today that we feel we need to release a product.
In terms of the technologies out there, there's a lot of technology breakthroughs and innovation. What excites you most at the moment?
In the past, all ERP vendors looked at the ERP like this. We all admired the applications we had, and we looked at data as a repository, and we called it the database. And we always asked the question, what database do you use? Most customers that buy our products in our markets are now typically on their second or third or maybe even a fourth ERP implementation. The actually ERP application is interesting. It's not what's making or breaking decisions. It's the insights from the data. Looking at ERP inside out, where we start with the data, we start with the predictability, we start with the decisions you can make about data, and all of a sudden, I think the opportunities start to open up. At the end of the day, a customer has many systems that they run in-house. The system of record, the system the CFO trusts, is the ERP. So you could say we spent the last 10, 15 years using our ERPs to gather all this information for customers about their business. I think we are just at the beginning of this journey where we're going to turn that information into proactive decisions. Today, most of the decisions are done within the ERP. Imagine the day when you're starting to mix these decisions with trends in the industry, with what other manufacturers are looking at. you start looking at this omni-channel approach around everything from sentiment analysis to social technology to these trends that will exist. And imagine as a CFO being instantly told that not only could you have made a better decision in the way you priced your products, here is what other manufacturers did. Did you just see this information released about a government regulation that you could have taken advantage of? Turning that around to me is a postmodern ERP, where it's, again, like I said earlier, it's a dynamic, real-time, context-aware system that's integrating way beyond the four walls of a customer and using this data to help make decisions. I don't think that's too far away. I think in the next 12 to 18 months, we'll start to see gains being realized from that. The advantage for Epicor is the fact that because we understand industries, because we understand what happens within a warehouse, in the MES world, we have a product called MatTech. Our team got excited because they were able to change the cycle time from 20 milliseconds to 5 picoseconds. And they said that's important for customers who do stampings because that's the speed at which stampings happen. So because we're so intrinsically are about solving customer problems, when you start looking at this level of data, the decisions that come out of it, I think, are going to be phenomenal.
You've not been talking about that this week much, but it sounds like it's in the plan. Does that mean your multi-tenant solutions, you'll collect data into a single repository to use for benchmarking in the future?
I'm not sure exactly how the analysis will be performed on the data. I'm not sure data needs to be aggregated at all times to be able to drive a decision. There are tools and technologies available that can go look for certain data elements that are needed to make a decision. You got to balance innovation with security and comfort of customers. Everything that we do obviously will be highly aggregated, highly encrypted. With rulings like GDPR, it will obviously be highly compliant, but the decisions that need to be driven are decisions that customers will benefit from. And again, on a global scale, different countries will move at different velocities, accepting and adopting technologies like these. And that is the reason we are being very careful as we are playing all of this out. As I've always said, technology will always be there when you're ready for technology. Do you understand the use case and do you understand the customer problem you're going to solve? And that's where a lot of our energy has been going into right now.
Looking over the next year, what do you see as your key challenges that you've got to break through?
The pace of change is accelerating, which is great. As a technologist, it's a great time to be in technology with everything from devices to wearables to the IoT. Every day when I wake up, sit with my iPad next to me, you go into Twitter, you go into LinkedIn, you go into Yammer, and you're just blown away by the things that are changing. It's about the discipline of staying focused on what you believe is going to make a biggest difference and then be able to pick and adapt to the right technology. Where we place that slider bar at Epicor is going to be crucial. So my challenge is we obviously don't want to place it too much to the left where you're letting innovation pass you, which I know we won't do. Nor do you want to start placing it so much to the right that you're getting enamored by changing technology and you're constantly chasing yourself. I think I have a great team here at Epicor, and I spend a lot of my time talking to them about let's be sure about adoption of technology, even if it means waiting a little bit. You don't have to be first each time something comes out, but you better be sure when you do it.
And you always have a limited budget as well, don't you?
And then you got to fit it within the context of your budget and affordability.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you.